Welcome to Destination Unlocked with me, Daniel Edward.
Just about ready to depart.
Please make sure your seatbelt is not fast and do make yourself comfortable.
Destination Unlocked is the chatty travel podcast where a local expert helps you unlock their corner of the world. Today we're unlocking Chicago, a city I've somehow never visited, but absolutely plan to after this conversation. My guest is Hilary Marzek, founder of Inside Chicago Walking Tours, and she's packed this episode with genuinely useful tips, from the best Chicago neighborhoods to what to eat and what not to put on a hot dog, to why Chicago's architecture is some of the most important in the world. If you're planning a Chicago trip or flirting with the idea, stay with us. So, Hilary, where are you unlocking for us today?
Hello, Daniel. I am unlocking beautiful Chicago on a sunny, crisp autumn day.
Beautiful. And thank you for using the English term autumn. A fall morning in North America is just gorgeous. It's an amazing time of year to be there.
Yes, definitely it is. And I think that Chicago gets a bad rap for its weather. So I'm here to represent for the autumn and even the cooler seasons.
I think we will come on to weather, actually. I think a conversation about Chicago without talking about the weather is like talking about London without talking about the rain. But before we do touch on the weather, if somebody has never been to Chicago before, let's just round up the top things that they simply must have on an itinerary, and then we'll dive in from there.
First of all, dress for the weather, obviously. We always say there's no such thing as bad weather, only badly dressed people. Given that, I would say in terms of things to do and things to see in Chicago, number one, absolutely the architecture. That's hands down something that you have to see, however it is that you see it, whether it is doing a river architecture tour or a walking tour that features interiors like my business does. Just getting out and actually enjoying and learning to appreciate the place that Chicago has in not only American, but really international modern architectural history. That's your number one thing. Do the architecture. I would also say appreciate Chicago for its food. Believe it or not, we're not just pizza and hot dogs and Italian beef, though those are all very good. We have about 200 neighborhoods. And just like so many big American cities, we are a city of immigrant communities and immigrant histories. And so our cuisine reflects that. So I would say eat your way through Chicago's neighborhoods. We have an area at downtown where Buckingham Fountain is, by Millennium Park, by Maggie Daly Park. There's this big chunk of green space. We've had some part of the city since our earliest days designated to be publicly accessible parkland.
I definitely think of the waterfront, the beaches onto the lake, which you don't even realize is a lake. It's so ginormous. I hadn't thought about the green spaces.
And it's just gotten bigger and bigger. We call it Chicago's front yard. It's Grant Park. And then just west of that, going along Michigan Avenue, we have also little special gardens, including the Spirit of Music Garden, where we have free outdoor dance festivals in the summer. We call this little string of gardens the Emerald Necklace that Michigan Avenue wears along the lake. So yeah, we are a very green city.
That is so poetic. I love that. The Emerald Necklace. Oh, maybe it was Emerald City.
You know, there actually is a connection there. Did you know that?
I did not. Go on. What's the connection?
The Emerald City, actually, in The Wizard of Oz, L. Frank Baum actually wrote The Wizard of Oz in Chicago. And don't quote me on this, but I am being recorded, so maybe you can quote me on this.
You will be quoted.
I believe that Walt Disney's father worked at our World's Fair of 1893, where the main campus of the World's Fair was these gorgeous neoclassical Beaux-Arts-style buildings that were meant to be temporary. It was kind of like a glorified carnival. And no one had ever seen anything like that in the United States, certainly hadn't seen it electrified at night. It must have been absolutely magical. And so it's kind of commonly said that Walt Disney then grew up with stories from his dad about this magical place. And then he comes up with Disneyland and the castle and the magical city, you know, whether it is the Magical Kingdom or the Emerald City, they both kind of have their heart in Chicago, believe it or not.
Wow. I always imagined that he would have been sitting in Kansas thinking, oh, how do I get out of here? He wrote it in the Emerald City. The thing with Chicago is it gets many nicknames, Windy City being one of the more famous ones, which obviously touches on some of your delightful weather. But also America's best big city. Apparently, it's official. It's been voted America's best big city for 9 years running, which is amazing.
Yes, that's absolutely true.
And people internationally might have incorrectly assumed New York. But no, America's best big city is Chicago. Why do you think that is?
Well, I would say working in tourism, I do meet a lot of international guests. And I can't tell you how often I hear the exact same kind of sequence of thinking and events and planning that people make. They say, when you visit the United States, first place you have to visit is New York. And then because you want to see something on the West Coast, you might jump over to LA or San Francisco or maybe even Las Vegas. And then maybe because you have a layover in Chicago, you'll do a day in Chicago. And every single person, I'm not saying this because I work in the tourism industry, I'm saying this because this is the actual feedback I've had over 20 years. People say, we really wish we would have started in Chicago because you're just not expecting it. You don't know that it's such a beautiful city. You don't know that there's so much to do. So I think that in a way, Chicago is sort of a best kept secret, especially among international tourists, but even among American tourists.
If you were to plan out a 3-day visit, you said there are hundreds of neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you base yourself?
I think base yourself downtown because you are centrally located. It's walkable. The whole city is relatively walkable, but obviously when you're downtown where all the L lines come together and converge, that's where most of the museums are. That is where we have so many of our free events, you know, throughout the summer, for example, or even around Christmas time, that's where we have the Chris Kindle Mark. That's where we have the official city Christmas tree. You're in the center of everything and you have the easiest access to L lines and buses so that you can go explore other neighborhoods.
L lines. How easy is it to use?
I think they're very easy to use. Picture, you know, Chicago right up against Lake Michigan. Lake Michigan is in the east. Chicago's to the west of it. You basically have this nugget of a downtown and all these different L lines kind of spider out through the city. And so the farther out you get, the more spread apart these L lines get. And so if you get out into the farther neighborhoods, it's difficult to transfer from one line to another without coming in, transferring near the nugget of downtown and then going back out. Or you just take bus lines to get from one to another.
A tourist coming for 3 days or so, should they get a pass card that just sort of covers them or you pay as you go?
I think getting some kind of pass, get a day pass. I want to say for a whole day on the CTA, it's like $5.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
My gosh, in winter, you could just ride it for the warmth.
And some people do.
I've considered it myself. And in terms of museums, you are spoiled in Chicago. I don't think people realize how much there is there. The Art Museum is the one that immediately comes to my mind. What would come for you?
I would say that probably my two favorite museums are the Art Institute, absolutely, but also the Chicago History Museum. You know, things like the Shedd Aquarium, the Adler Planetarium, the Field Museum of Natural History. Those are all wonderful museums. And I tell people, if you have more than a few days in Chicago, absolutely go and explore those. You know, if you really like fish, absolutely go ahead. But I also feel like you can get an aquarium and a planetarium anywhere in the world. Whereas you can't get this specific art that you're going to find in the Art Institute anywhere else. You can't get a museum specifically about Chicago history anywhere else. So I recommend those two more than anything.
I think you're so right. And I have had heated discussions about aquariums with people before because it sounds so dismissive, but it sort of is also true.
I mean, we are on this earth for a finite amount of time and how you spend your time shows what you value. And I'm telling you, if you love fish, then explore the aquariums of the world. No one is judging.
And if you were to pick one or two main neighborhoods outside of downtown that are well worth hopping on the L and exploring for half a day or something, where would you say to head out to?
It's a good question. The two that pop to mind, because there's something in every neighborhood. I would say Wicker Park, Bucktown are two neighborhoods. We kind of lump them together and say Bucktown, Wicker Park. And I would say that that's a fun neighborhood and an accessible neighborhood to get to several stops off of downtown, taking the blue line out. You have this wonderful combination of historic architecture from the great beer barons of the 19th century building their mansions out there to very hip, even hipster places like cafes and restaurants. And it's a very interesting mix of people. Wicker Park is probably the most kind of visitor friendly while not being downtown. But then if you want to just see kind of how Chicagoans live, then getting to a maybe lesser known but still accessible and still pretty neighborhood. There's a neighborhood called Andersonville that's historically a very Swedish area. That's kind of how Chicago neighborhoods are, is like who settled it when? That's kind of what we know it as. And so there's a big old water tower on one of the buildings there that has a huge Swedish flag on it, for example. So Andersonville is like a lot of Chicago neighborhoods where it has kind of a commercial drag that has a bunch of restaurants and shops. And then just off of that, you have all kinds of representative residential architecture, brownstones, graystones, bungalows. So I think Andersonville is kind of an accessible neighborhood to do a little bit of like shopping and people watching, but also get out into the neighborhoods and just kind of see what Chicagoans are like and see how they live.
Really see how the locals live life, because that's how you experience what real life is like. Otherwise, you just see the billboard.
Yeah. Or you just see the gangster movies and you figure that we all have, how many times have I encountered French people who say, "Ah, Chicago, Al Capone, bang bang." I'm like, it's a little more than that.
I've got to ask you, given that we're sort of veering to the Italian side of Chicago, about pizzas. Deep dish.
What would you like to know?
Really, I'd like to know why. I don't know if that offends people. How, really, I think is the main question. How did this happen to a pizza?
You talk about it like we desecrated it. We made it better.
Okay.
Here's the thing, and I will stick to this till the day I die. I think that food is like any kind of art. It's very subjective, and everybody has things they like and things they don't like. And so when people, get up on Facebook saying, like, "You're not a real Chicagoan if you like deep dish pizza," it's like, come on now. Like, that's ridiculous to say something like that. Everybody's got stuff they like, they got stuff they don't like. So the way that Chicago deep dish came to be is that pizza back around the mid-20th century, like World War II era, pizza wasn't really a thing for us. And apparently, when GIs were over in Europe, particularly in Italy, they experienced pizza. They experienced a thin crust, Neapolitan essentially style pizza that wasn't meant to be a meal. It was kind of like a snack food. And so it got brought back here and served in bars and taverns. After the war, a lot of guys started opening up corner taverns in their neighborhoods. And the idea was you want to serve something to go with your beer after a long day of work, but you don't want to destroy your appetite because then your wife's going to be mad, right? And so we did start selling thin crust cut into squares. And that's a Chicago thing, thin crust, not cut into triangles, but cut into little squares so that you could have just a little bit of a snack with your beer. And then in the early 1940s, there were two guys who got together, Richard Novoretti. He was called Rick Ricardo, together with a guy from Texas, Ike Sewell. They opened up a pizzeria in River North in Chicago. And everybody says Ike Sewell, being from Texas, everything's bigger in Texas, wanted to make pizza into kind of like a stick to your bones meal kind of food. And so they made deep dish pizza. Who actually came up with the recipe is a hotly debated thing, but they came up with deep dish style pizza in 1943. And with the success of that pizzeria 12 years later, they opened up a second pizzeria down the block. And so now that they had two within a block of each other, they gave them numbers, Pizzeria Uno and Pizzeria Due. And so Pizzeria Uno is now this huge chain throughout the United States, but deep dish pizza was really born in Chicago at the original Pizzeria Uno.
Wow. And is it popular, or is it a tourist thing now?
I think Chicagoans, they feel like they feel like it gives them cred somehow to say, like, "I don't like deep dish. That's only for tourists." That's not true at all. Tourists are going out to these neighborhoods, these far-flung neighborhoods, having deep dish pizza. No, some of us like it, some of us don't. It's really a personal thing. I will say this: a poorly made deep dish Chicago style pizza has a lot of bread at the bottom because that's the cheap ingredient, right? Because a well-made Chicago style pizza, and what is really kind of like the essence of it, is that it has a very thin, crispy crust at the bottom that's stretched up a 2-inch side pan. And then they put the cheese on top of the crust, which basically protects it from the wetness of any ingredients that go on top. It's almost like a filled casserole. And so if you have a well-made Chicago-style pizza, it has a nice, thin, crispy layer of dough at the bottom. If you have a poorly made one, it's going to have a big fat layer of cakey dough. And that just means that they were trying to be cheap and they're making it.
So they should show an x-ray of their pizzas
I do all the time.
to prove themselves. Yeah. I've got another food thing to ask you, and then we're going to get into architecture because I know that's your bread and butter whilst we're talking of food. Why can't you have ketchup on a hot dog?
So, Chicago style hot dogs began back in the 1930s. I think they called them depression sandwiches. The idea being that if you have to make a meal go far and you have a sandwich with your meat and your bread, because that's really what a hot dog is, right? You've got your meat and your bread to make it stretch farther and fill your belly more, put everything on it from the stalls around you at the market. We say run it through the garden. And so you have this kind of filling, dare I say, healthy toppings like tomatoes and onions and dill pickle and things like that. Ketchup would be too sweet and overpowering. It would interrupt, it would disrupt what is really kind of a delicate balance of flavors and textures and even temperatures.
I've never heard a hot dog be described as delicate before. I've been eating the wrong hot dogs. I'm coming to Chicago to try these delicate hot dogs.
A Chicago style hot dog, if you want to get technical, is always made with a Vienna beef hot dog. And the casing of it has like a nice little snap to it. So it's not like super, super soft.
I've always been convinced that's plastic.
Now it's probably just sheep intestine or something lovely like that.
Oh, yummy, yummy. Shall we move on to architecture? And you've created your tour company around this part of Chicago. Inside Chicago Walking Tours is the name of your company. So we're not just talking about the exteriors of buildings sometimes, but maybe should we start outside and we'll work our way in?
Yeah, absolutely. So the number one thing I would say to do in Chicago as a tourist is an architecture river tour. Anyway, after I had done that for 6 years and then worked as head of product development for one of the big boat companies here, I just kind of felt like this is somewhat limiting. It's a wonderful experience, but if that's the only experience you ever get of our architecture as the art that it is, then you're really missing 80% of the equation.
And so you then went out, set up your own company, and yours is walking. So you're much closer to the buildings, which maybe means you don't get that skyline view that people get from the water. But what do you get instead?
I would say that you get to really experience the intentionality of the architects. When I do river tours, I am always encouraging people, this is such a beautiful view, but I can give you 90 minutes of a laundry list of architects' names and dates and style names and all that. You're going to forget it as soon as you leave the boat. But when you actually get out on foot and you can understand that this building has a heaviness about it and this one has a lightness about it because this one is coming from this era where they were exploring, modern technologies, or this one wants a heaviness because they are trying to make you feel like it's been there a longer time than it has. That's the kind of thing you just don't have time, you don't have the perspective to teach about on a river.
And it's storytelling. Architecture tells a story in physical form.
Absolutely. It really is an art. Sometimes I feel kind of cheesy that I'm really hitting on this point for people, but I'll tell them, you pay ticket prices to go and see sculptures and paintings and whatnot at the Art Institute, but you could just walk right into this building. And this building, this is the final physical manifestation of a series of drawings, a series of edits, a series of imaginations and arguments and investments. You can't walk into the Mona Lisa, but you could walk into this building. There's an intentionality that I want people to appreciate about it.
Is there a building in Chicago that speaks to you the most?
I would say the Chicago Cultural Center is probably my favorite. It's right across the street from Millennium Park, where we have the Bean, which is actually called Cloud Gate, but everybody knows it as the Bean. I will ask a boatload of 200 people, who here has seen the Bean? And literally 200 hands go up. And I'll say, okay, hands down. Who here managed to get right across the street from the Bean to see the world's largest Tiffany Favreau glass dome made of 30,000 pieces of Tiffany Favreau glass made mostly by women? And like three hands go up and people start looking at each other like, what? How did we miss this? It's because we miss the things that are next to the famous things. Maybe it's because I'm a second born child that I think this way.
I'm the eldest, so I can't comment on that one. I'm sure there's still plenty of spotlight to go around. You write your tours, don't you? You curate them. Talk to me about how you do that part.
I started in 2014. I make all the tours. I research them. I put them together. Back when I was first starting my business, for a couple of years, I was just walking around, getting more and more interested in the city at street level. And I would literally just be walking down the street and I would kind of see in a window and I'd be like, that looks interesting. And I would pop inside, learn about the building. I do still make all of the tours myself. I now have 9 guides. So I hire them. I train them. It's a very small business type of thing. I have everybody over to my condo for Christmas and I make my mom's spaghetti and meatballs for everybody. It's fun. You know, I hire these people that I truly like and enjoy as people. We're all performers and teachers. Everybody's got a sense of humor. They do the public tours and I do mostly private tours and then boat tours.
Which of your tours are you most proud of creating?
That's a really tough one. So my very first tour that I created is still the most popular one. And I kind of shot myself in the foot with the naming of it because I called it The World Within, Dazzling Interiors of the Loop. But the problem is all of my tours go inside at least a few places. Like that's the whole point of the tours, inside Chicago walking tours. But so many people will contact me and say, we want to do the interiors tour. And I'm like, they're all interiors tours, but they're referring to The World Within because they think that that's the only one or that that's the main one. So I would say I'm most proud of that being my original, still being the most popular in the meat and potatoes of the business. And to get people who are in their 70s who say, I grew up in Chicago. I've never been in this building. And if you're not from Chicago, you don't even know where you're allowed to go.
It gives people confidence because, yeah, there's no way I would just let myself into a building which doesn't advertise itself as public. I'd be worried I'd get arrested.
Well, I'll always tell people if you don't know where you're allowed to go inside, try opening the door. The worst that could happen is it's locked or someone right inside tells you, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to be in here. You know, then your pride might be a little bit hurt, but you move on. But the best that could happen is that you do find some kind of space that you have access to, and it might be a really beautiful space.
If people want to book onto your tours, how do they do that? Where's the best place to find out information and to do the booking?
I would say just directly through my website, which is the name of my company, Inside Chicago Walking Tours with an S.com. Inside Chicago Walking Tours.com. We have a tour schedule page, so you can book directly through that. And then whatever email you put in, that's where your ticket confirmation is going to be sent. It's got the starting location. They all start in different places. They all end in different places because it's different content.
And how far in advance is a really good time to do it? Because you do limit the number of people that can go into each individual tour, right?
Yeah. I would say it depends on when you visit. If you're planning to be here on a weekend, you definitely want to book at least a couple weeks out. But if you're like here for work and you're here during the week, chances are we'll have space for you on a tour. So even if it's the next day, you know, it doesn't hurt to check and see if we have room on our tours for you. And there's a bunch of tour options too. And they all go inside at least a few buildings.
I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Hilary Marzek from Inside Chicago Walking Tours. As you have probably worked out already, she is your classic inquisitive researcher. So a walking tour with her or her team always unlocks something unexpected. Well, I mean, in this case, she unlocks doors that were never locked to begin with. But you'd have just walked straight by without her. Her website, once again, is www.insidechicagowalkingtours.com. And while we're on the topic of websites, if you're enjoying this conversation, you'll probably have a great time exploring the Destination Unlocked website too. And that's www.destinationunlocked.com. You'll find more conversations, blogs, articles, city guides, recipe cards, if you feel passionately about homemade deep dish pizza, you're on your own when it comes to boiling a Vienna and putting it in a hot dog bun. And of course, it would be so great if you would consider subscribing to Destination Unlocked wherever you're currently listening to this episode. All right, back to Chicago. And now it's time for a quiz. It's UV Hillary. Good luck. So the mirrored icon that's in Millennium Park is officially called what?
Cloudgate.
Yeah, and you said earlier that the nickname for it is The Bean. For me, that is the most famous individual piece of public art in Chicago.
The untitled Picasso sculpture that we have in Daley Plaza, that's been there since 1967. That was kind of like the bean before the bean was the bean. We've had the bean out there since 2004. And I always tell people it's kind of a no-brainer. Like, how do you engage people in a public space through public art? You give a gigantic mirror because we all like to look at ourselves.
Second question. The pedestrian waterfront path that threads through the downtown area along the skyscrapers is called what?
It depends which water you're talking about. You could be talking about the Riverwalk running along the main branch of the Chicago River. You could be talking about Grant Park, which runs along Lake Michigan. Maggie Daley Park also kind of runs right up to there, though you have Lakeshore Drive running in between it. You could be talking about Olive Park, which is on the north side of Navy Pier. That also abuts the harbor. So there's a whole bunch of answers for that one because we are a water-based city.
You are racking up the points here. You just got 4 points for a 1-point question. Amazing. You're an overachiever. I had the Riverwalk, but yes, I take your many points there. This is question number 3. I think there's only one answer to this one. Which architect's former home and studio sits in Oak Park?
The fact that you said home and studio, I knew already before you even said Oak Park that you were talking about Frank Lloyd Wright. And here's another little nugget of knowledge. His mentor, he had many mentors, but the only one he ever really admitted was his mentor, was an architect named Louis Sullivan. Frank Lloyd Wright worked for Louis Sullivan, and Louis Sullivan loaned him a few thousand dollars to build his home and studio in Oak Park. And while he was using his boss's money to build his home and studio, he started taking commissions from clients under the table so he wouldn't have to pay Louis Sullivan for it. And so he got fired. Everybody knows Frank Lloyd Wright. Louis Sullivan died too poor to afford his own tombstone. So if people know about Frank Lloyd Wright, I want to make sure they know about Louis Sullivan as well.
Gosh, sneaky.
Sneaky.
I'm in shock.
Oh yeah, Frank Lloyd Wright was definitely a jerk.
Gosh, oh, spilled the tea.
Right, the tea.
We've got a one-letter answer next. What is the nickname Chicagoans used for the elevated trains?
So we call it the L, which is a cutting of the word elevated, but we don't spell it E-L, we just spell it with the letter L.
I was wondering why it was called the L, and now it is so obvious.
Yep, it's for the elevated train tracks. We started building the L in the 1890s. It's a visible part of our history.
And it's not going to flood.
Yeah, exactly. And you get a nice view of the buildings when you ride around downtown.
Final question in our quiz. Chicago has been named the best big city in the US for how many consecutive years?
So you gave away the answer. You said 9. And I think I would have gotten this one wrong because I would have said 8. Condé Nast has been naming us the best big city in America. And, you know, especially considering what's going on in our country, I don't know what kind of news gets out, but Chicago has recently been painted as this war zone. It is so incredibly not true. It just shocks me that a lie, such a bald-faced lie, can be told about a place. And I'm hoping that lie is not affecting people who want to visit Chicago, because it's simply not true.
You managed to get 9 points out of 5, so I think you did pretty well on that quiz.
I always make sure to do the extra credit at the end of the test, just in case.
I want to go into a couple of sort of hidden gems as we get towards the end of our chat about Chicago. There's loads to see. We've spoken about some of the big ones, but is there something which could, you know, be an hour where it's raining and you've nipped inside somewhere and it's actually made your trip?
Personally, I think that the conservatories are really lovely spots. Those are those turn of the century greenhouses, these massive greenhouses. We have two famous ones. One is the Garfield Park Conservatory. One is the Lincoln Park Conservatory, which is right next to the Lincoln Park Zoo, which is one of the last free zoos left in the country. And so the conservatories, I think, are a beautiful spot if it's, you know, the middle of winter or it's starting to get cold or it starts raining. To be able to dip in there and it feels almost tropical and you're just surrounded by plants, I think that's a really lovely kind of hidden gem. I think also knowing about the Pedway and how to use it. The Pedway is an underground system of about 5 miles worth of passages. Sometimes it's just lower levels of buildings. Sometimes it's tunnels going under streets. We have a tour that I call Open Your Eyes, Chicago's Underground Pedway and Other Secrets of the Loop.
Ooh.
Because it's a great system to know about if you do want to get out of the rain, get out of the cold, or even get out of the heat.
Yes,
you know, you can stay in the air conditioning.
So the Pedway is essentially a walking underground.
Exactly. Ped as in pedestrian.
And what would you find actually down there? Or is it just to get between things?
There's all kinds of goblins and Batman and things like that. No, it really is a transit system. And there are certain parts that might go through kind of commercial areas where they might have little shops down there. So, for example, there's a section that goes through the lower level of a development called Block 37. And that's basically a big multi-story mall in the middle of downtown Chicago. You can literally fly in from England, take the Blue Line from O'Hare, get out in the Blue Line station at Washington downtown, go through the Pedway through Block 37, keep going through the Pedway, maybe go to Millennium Station, which is an underground train station connected to the Pedway, take a train out to Indiana, take one of their trains to get out to their airport and go back to England. So like you could actually come to the United States without ever having to go outside because we have these underground tunnel systems that help us to avoid bad weather.
That sounds intriguing, but also terrifying.
And that's part of the reason that I made a Pedway tour. Because you do hear people, of course, being afraid of like, oh, but it's Chicago, you know? And my favorite thing is going on Facebook and seeing people posting beautiful pictures of Chicago and saying, oh, it's such a beautiful city. And then some armchair revolutionary gets up on their comments and is like, yeah, if you want to get shot. And so if then you add this kind of layer of mystery to it of, oh, but these are underground tunnels. That must be even more dangerous. And so I like to kind of bust those myths open and show people, no, it really is manageable. It is easily traversable. It is good to know about because it's just a functional system. There's actually a very cool show. It's called Cities of the Underworld. Have you ever heard of it?
No, but I'm writing it down.
It's a wonderful show. It's called Cities of the Underworld. And there is, I believe, a Chicago episode. There's also an Edinburgh episode. But the Chicago episode talks about those different levels of tunnels under the city.
I will look that one up. I've got one more question for you before our quick fire round to wrap us
sure,
up.
Sure.
And that is, if let's say you've taken a week in Chicago. So you've got a nice amount of time and you want to spend one of those days actually outside of the city. What would you say is an easy day trip that's really worthwhile from Chicago?
Well, I think it depends on which season you're visiting. So I would say if you are visiting in the summer, it's nice to go a couple hours north into Michigan or along the Indiana, Lake Michigan lakeside, because there's some really beautiful beaches, especially all up the west side of Michigan as a state. Lake Michigan is a giant glacial lake and it's always cold. But the Chicago side of it, the west side of the lake, because of the way the water moves and kind of refreshes itself with warm water rising and cool water falling, we get all the cold stuff. We still swim in it, but we get all the cold stuff. So you can go to the beaches along the western coast of Michigan, and those are some of the most beautiful beaches in the world. So I would say for summer, do that. I would say for fall, go to Starved Rock State Park, which is about an hour and a half from Chicago, hour and a half, 2 hours. And it's these just beautiful sandstone bluffs and colors and walkways. And it's just a really, really beautiful spot. They've got this old lodge there built in, I think, the 1930s. Winter, maybe visit Galena, which is an old historic town a few hours away from Chicago. It's very cute when it's dressed up for Christmas. Spring, I would say, maybe go to some place that has good gardens, like going up, once again, going up to Michigan, to Holland, Michigan for their tulip festival.
Oh, brilliant. Well, thank you. We've got a whole year worth of day trips there.
The wrap-up, roundup, quickfire finish is now ready for boarding.
Let's do our quickfire round. We'll start with your top thing to see or do in Chicago.
I'm not saying this because I own the business. It's to take an interior architecture tour. A river tour is gorgeous. It gives you an overview. If you can do both, I think those are the two sides of the coin.
Second one, a tourist trap to avoid.
Ooh, I hope I'm not going to get in trouble with anybody for saying this. I would say maybe any of those really gimmicky tours, like a donut tour or the Ghosts and Gangsters tours. It's like when customers ask me a question about some gangster history, I'll say, well, tell me, do you want to know the truth or do you want the narrative? Yeah, I would say those kind of gimmicky tours, maybe skip those and go for something that has a little bit more meat to its bones.
What's your favorite time of year to visit?
Ooh, also a tough one, because every season I feel like, oh, I really like this season, because I've always been an autumn person. I love autumn. I'm wearing a flannel shirt right now, for goodness sakes. But I think that spring in Chicago is really breathtaking. We are a very green city. We have these amazing flower beds and medians that have the flowers in them. Tulip time in Chicago is stunning. Every single bulb is planted individually by workers. And it's just, it's a beautiful time of year. So I think spring is the prettiest. Summer, probably the most stuff to do. There's all kinds of free programs. I think because we weather the winter the way that we do, once it starts to get a little bit warm outside, the city is like, here, get outside, do all these free things. And so week by week, there's free neighborhood festivals, there's art festivals, there's music festivals, blues fest, jazz fest, gospel fest, house music fest. The one that's probably my favorite is the Chicago Summer Dance, a free dance festival throughout the summer where you get free dance lessons to go with whatever music is being played that evening.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Amazing. What would you say is your top book about Chicago?
Aside from all the architecture books, I would say The Devil in the White City by Eric Larson. The White City is that main campus of our World's Fair of 1893. And the devil is America's first documented serial killer, H.H. Holmes, who used the popularity of the fair to murder people. It's a historic fiction. It really brings that whole moment of Chicago's history to life. And just learned so much about that moment of the World's Fair, quarter of a century after so much of Chicago burned down in a great fire. We got to reintroduce ourselves to the world and to ourselves. And so we debuted things like the Ferris wheel, which was meant to be a competition to the Eiffel Tower. It was really a fantastic moment in our history, and that book brings it to life.
What would you say is the top food or drink to try? You said there's so much in Chicago, but if you had to pick one.
If I had to pick one, I tend to go to Italian beef, which, you know, when you grow up with something just being a thing, you don't realize that it's a local thing. I've had people say, like, where do we go to get a good Italian beef? I'm like, I don't know, just go get one. You know, but it actually is a thing. It's essentially a roast beef sandwich on a special kind of bread that can take the wetness of the beef that you put inside. And when you order it, depending where you go, there's a certain kind of lingo that goes with it. So if you get it dry, they'll just take the meat out of the vat with the tongs and they'll shake it off and they'll put it in the bun. If you get it wet, they'll not bother shaking it off. They'll put it in the bun and then they might put a little ladle of the juice on it. You can also get it dunked, which is what a lot of people do, where they literally make the sandwich, then they take it with the tongs and they dunk it in the juice that it just came out of. So it's a messy sandwich. You can get it sweet, which is made with roasted bell peppers. You can get it hot, which is made with jardinera. So you walk into an Italian beef place and you'll say, I'll have one sweet, wet, and they'll know what you're talking about.
Oh my gosh, you got to really know the code.
You do.
And my final question is a top authentic souvenir to take home. I'm not thinking of a fridge magnet that you can get from anywhere, but what's something that's really Chicago?
I would say the first thing that comes to mind for me is craft beers and spirits. I think that's just kind of become a thing. People like to have small batch craft things. So I would say if you do enjoy alcohol, doing something like that, like we have a local distillery called Koval, Koval, and that's just tucked up in one of the neighborhoods. They make all kinds of whiskeys. You can do a tasting there. They make a whiskey just out of oats, which has a nice smooth finish to it because it's made of oats. For non-alcoholic, also something edible, I would say maybe some Garrett popcorn, which is a big thing. They do this caramel corn, they do cheese popcorn, and ideally you get those two together in what they used to call the Chicago mix, and then they renamed it the Garrett mix. If you get the cheese one, you got to make sure you have little moist towelettes for your fingers because it dyes your fingers orange.
Hillary from Inside Chicago walking to us. Thank you so much for unlocking Chicago for us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It was really fun to talk with you.
That's all for this episode of Destination Unlocked. A huge thank you to Hilary Marzek from Inside Chicago Walking Tours for helping us unlock Chicago, from the river views and interior architecture to deep dish debates and those gloriously messy Italian beef sandwiches. If you're planning a Chicago trip, go check out her tours. They're such a smart way to see the city. And if you enjoyed this chat, hit follow or subscribe so you can find your way back for our next journey. For more interviews, guides, and extra travel tips, head to destinationunlocked.com. I'm Daniel Edward. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.